It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Hey, we did it. We have a new winner for the long-distance listener, and it's Adam, who is in lovely downtown Nosara, Costa Rica?
Nosara.
I've never been there. Yeah. Anyway, I've taken a little R&R in between radio shows. And are you back next week, Adam, in here or after that?
No, I'll be doing this show and the next show remote, and then I'm back.
Okay, cool. Well, so far so good. It is truly unbelievable how far they've come in communications, because you could easily be sitting right next to me. It's so loud and clear. So we will act as normal, except when I point at you, you won't see me. How's that?
That is true, and nothing personal. I'm glad I'm not sitting next to you, though.
I think I can understand that well enough not to take any offense. After all, I've seen pictures of where you are. Where I am, not bad. Where you are, holy cow. Pretty nice.
It is pretty nice.
Anyway, we are live and in person in various locations, as always. And to all the regulars, thanks for listening in again. It is, of course, you guys that keep us going. If you're new to the show, whether on purpose or by accident, stick around for the hour. I promise you always learn something. How useful, who knows? But we will tell you for the next hour all the stuff we would like to talk about. But if you would rather change the subject, you have that power. All you have to do is pick up a phone and dial 904-222-8255, and you will go immediately to the head of the line. Callers always have priority around here. Well, here we are in almost the middle of June. How the heck we got there, I will never understand. But we're there, and things are pretty good. I don't know how much better we could truly expect them to be. Now, the future is a little bit more uncertain than what's going on now. But for right now, things are pretty much booming out there. The market reflects it. And with that in mind, take it away.
Yeah, it has been pretty darn good, I have to agree. And we thought this might happen with the reopening of America. I mean, I know it seems weird that we still have so many people unemployed and the economy hasn't fully recovered, but there are big portions of the economy that are opening every day. There is going to be a ton of pent-up demand, and I'll get to that in a little bit, but there's just a lot of reasons for optimism right now around the world as the vaccines get rolled out, and COVID is, I don't think we'll maybe ever get rid of it, but it's definitely not the threat that it was a year ago or even 3 months ago. So there's a lot of good things happening, and it's being reflected in the stock market, and that is something that we expect to continue throughout this year as things continue to get back to quote-unquote normal. So outside of the Dow, it was a nice week of gains for the market without much in the way of wild trading or big swings, and that's typical for this time of year. Many people take vacations, including myself, and traders as well. So you just won't see typically the volume or the volatility in June and July that you would during other parts of the year. And it didn't stop despite the lower volumes and the lack of wild trading, it didn't stop the S&P from tacking on another 0.4%. The NASDAQ actually had a really great week. It added 1.8%, and the Dow flipped a little bit, and it now trails the S&P for the year, but it's still up 12.7%, so nothing really to complain about there. There was some healthy rotation in S&P sectors again this week, with financials, materials, and industrials selling off from overbought levels, and energy even declined. It still remains pretty overbought. It's the single best performing sector on the S&P 500 year to date. So not surprising to see a little bit of pullback, even though it does lead all sectors in gains for the year. Within the S&P, there's a disparity sector by sector in terms of what's overbought and what isn't, where earlier this year everything was overbought. Now there's some neutral sectors as well as some overbought sectors and some extreme overbought sectors, and that all has to do with how far it is trading above its 50-day moving average. But basically, the market has been really well, but finally, there actually looks like some entry points. If you're looking to get in right now, I would look on a sector-by-sector basis, but there's some sectors that look way more attractive than they did just a few weeks ago even. If you were concerned that COVID would destroy the travel industry, recent trends should probably have you rethinking that stance. If you look at Google search trends, it's a great way to track what's trending and what's happening in the world. And in the last 2 months, the search term hotels has reached a 5-year high. Additionally, Boeing this week, I believe, found a home for almost all of the 737 MAX jets whose orders had been canceled because air travel is returning faster than anyone expected. I was definitely on 2 full flights coming on vacation, and our vacation spot is just absolutely packed with people right now, and I expect that to continue probably for the rest of the year, really.
I think you're a classic example, too, because you're on the trip that was scheduled for last year.
So yeah, we scheduled this for last year. It got canceled, so we just rolled it forward a year, and it was all paid for in advance, which was kind of nice. And, I think there's a lot of people in the same boat as me right now.
I would think that's very common when you add the pent-up demand to the current demand. That equals, holy cow, is it busy out there.
It really is. I mean, the Fort Lauderdale airport was teeming with people just everywhere. It looked like pre-pandemic levels of flight. I might be wrong about that, but it sure appeared that way. There was lines at every restaurant, every restroom. I mean, it was just packed with people.
Well, so, if you just look at the TSA numbers, the screenings per day, we're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, for sure. But even anecdotally, I think if anyone else has traveled recently, you probably saw the same thing that I'm seeing. Another item that's been hot in 2021 is home sales. But what hasn't been hot in the last couple of weeks are home builder stock prices. They've really taken a tumble recently. They hit an all-time high a few weeks ago, and then they just recently dropped below their 50-day moving average. If you're looking for a buying opportunity, this could be one, or it could be the start of a bigger breakdown in the home builder sector. Definitely something to keep an eye on, though. It's interesting to see with home sales doing what they're doing that the stock's moving the other way. Is that a prediction of future events, or is it just just that things got overheated and people started to sell off? Remains to be seen.
Well, everybody's probably going to be shocked to hear me say this, but I actually have an opinion on that. And not only that, but I'm willing to share it. And the opinion that I have was formulated by and backed up by what happened in the lumber industry this week. Remember, we've been spending a lot of time on the price of lumber, pre-manufactured, whether it's plywood or cut to length or whatever, and it has been rising so fast. Not so much this week. In fact, it took quite a little tumble, and it's down from its recent highs by about 40%. Now, the impact of that is definitely something that's going to be seen soon, and I'll tell you right after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Adam is joining us remotely from Paradise, and I'm here pretty much in Paradise, too. It's a long ways away. How about that? Anyway, I was just mentioning something about lumber. Not only is it down 40% overall, it's down 18% this week. I mean, I want to come back to that after giving out a trivia question. This, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. The energy sector has been quite volatile and quite unpredictable for a long time. In the last 10 years, the S&P 500 is up 227.4% overall, You think about that. That's an astounding number in itself, because the long-term market averages are 12, 13, something like that. But over 10 years, 227%. What has the 10-year return in the energy sector been during that exact same time? And I'm going to give you a really big hint. It can be a number that is above or below zero. How about that? Anyway, back to what's going on in lumber. A lot of projects were being put off. A lot of contracts were being canceled or postponed and so on, because people looked at the price of lumber and it was jacking up the price of the house or the price of the deck or whatever you want to do. Well, now with that price tumbling, you're going to see the people who are on the margin coming back into it because the price is falling a bit. And that, I think, is going to re-stimulate the home builders segment of the economy, but it's also a really big contributor to things like employment and the overall GDP. So I'm very, very bullish for now. And the part that comes after for now we'll talk about as the day goes on. Anyway, Adam, you probably want to touch on a couple more points, like jobs and inflation and all that stuff.
I did want to do that. The first thing I want to talk about was CPI, or otherwise known as inflation. The CPI report that came out this week showed that inflation rose more than 0.5%, and that's the third month in a row that that has happened. Now, that is really, really high inflation compared to what we're used to in modern times. However, if you go back to 1981, there was a streak of months that lasted, that all had inflation rates higher than 0.5%, and it lasted for 14 months. The total increase in CPI during that time was 12%, but that's not even the longest or biggest increase on record. From 1978 through 1980, there was a streak of 28 months where the total increase was 27%. Talk about high inflation. I really hope we don't go back to those days. I don't think we're there, but it's really hard to tell right now because there's a lot of noise in the data that was caused by COVID, and I think we need to get through the summer months and into the fall to really see where we're going with the inflation numbers. It's really scary for a lot of people, especially retirees who are seeing their savings shrink or get inflated away. But I'm not convinced that we're in one of those same periods like we saw in the late 70s, early 80s.
Do you know what caused the one in 78?
I was 2, so I don't remember.
Tricky Dicky closed the gold window, and boom! And that's what it was. Actually, we blame Jimmy Carter because it's really easy and because we all pretty much lived through it. Not we, you all, but a lot of us did. But he was not really the source. He just didn't have the answer, so it kept escalating. But the source was Nixon. And he was undoubtedly the least economically intelligent president we had had up until that time. And I suppose it'd be a tie with Carter from there on in. But if you really want to know the blame of that one, it was from Nixon. And I'm telling you, having lived through that time, I was in the workforce, newly in the workforce at that time, and the things that were going on were just categorically unbelievable. So when Carter got in, then it just kept getting worse. And that, of course, led to him being a one-term president. And Ronald Reagan understood what was going on and hired Paul Volcker, who was a guy that I have never really liked. But he did what it took to get it to come back down by raising interest rates out of sight. But anyway, that's a little quick history of all that time. Back to you.
All right. Yeah, the other thing I did want to talk about was jobs. And the JOLTS report was released this week. That's one of my favorites. It's the job openings labor and labor turnover survey. In March, it showed an 8.4% increase in job openings. And then this month was even better. It showed a 12.5% increase. There are pretty much jobs everywhere right now. Another positive sign that the job market is doing really well is that quit rates are soaring. That means the quit rate is the percentage of workers that quit their job every month, and that's usually a sign that they've left to take a better job with more pay or more flexible or better benefits, more flexibility, whatever that might be. The quit rate is really high, and it's great for employees, terrible for employers, obviously, because that means you've got to pay more and treat your people better. But hey, that's the cost of a strong job market. And the labor market's still a little bit in the post-pandemic flux, but there are signs that are out there that it's a strong labor market. And if you're willing to work and if you're willing to look for a different job, you might even find something better than what you have right now.
Yeah, now let's talk a little bit about how it's being handled out there. The $300 extra payment that for unemployment insurance that's being given by the Fed, over 25 states have decided that it's holding back their economy and they're canceling it. They're canceling it. You ready for this? Sometime this summer in Florida, it's June 26th. I didn't look every state by state when they are, but sometime this summer. Do you know when that program ends?
September, I believe.
September the 6th. So I, to get a jump on things, would say, well, we ought to cancel that thing at least by August 31. Huh? What do people expect?
Government.
You announce a cancellation sometime in the future and everybody's going to go out there and decide that they no longer want that payment. They better get a job instead. I don't think so.
Government never works as fast as you want it to. So that's just a fact.
And that's at any level, on any topic. But the people are quitting, obviously, because they can make another 25, 50%. Well, why is that? Because the demand for people is far in excess of the number of people willing to work. 9.3 million jobs open right now. It's all just so ridiculous that a competent economist working for the White House right now, there's an oxymoron in itself, but I digress. A competent economist would say, we're going to give you, how about this, 10 days notice, and this program's going away, period. Or we're going to cut it in half every week until it virtually disappears. Do something to stimulate this. The threat of something happening in September when you're sitting on the beach making a lot of money in June is non-existent. People don't think that far ahead. Most people, I think, at least the ones that aren't working right now. To me, it just shows the massive incompetence of the people who are supposedly running this outfit. But you all know how I feel about that and have for years. So whatever else, Adam, you notice the sentiment is turning more to neutral from not quite so positive down to neutral. Still the bear sentiment is still pretty low, but I like the trend and there people are becoming more and more uncertain and less inclined to do crazy things in the market. That's a good thing overall for the rest of us. I just can't see any way it's going to slow down too much between now and the end of the year.
I think there's some room to consolidate. I think there's a lot of buyers in the market right now. Percentage of U.S. citizen assets that are in the stock market right now is extremely high,
right,
relative to what it is normally. So you've got a lot of people with a lot of their wealth tied up in the stock market, and more money coming in every day. So that's another positive sign for the market when that means there's buyers out there. But that could turn on a dime too as sentiment starts to go more negative. So we'll can't predict what will happen with that, but people are, despite what the sentiment numbers say, their actions show that they are pretty favorable towards the stock market right now.
Yeah, there's one more little aspect of that, too. The amount of cash held, not at banks right now, but in the hands of the public is extraordinary. So they're feeling something of a wealth effect, which means they're willing to do two things, spend and or invest. And quite frankly, I don't care which they do. It's still good for everything. So I try to talk myself out of being bullish And I just can't do it because all the arguments keep coming around to the same place again. One more thing for people looking to place some money in the market. It's time to start taking a look at the international sector. The international sector has lagged our market for a long, long time. And it's bumping right up against the breakout point. So if you don't have a percentage in your portfolio of international equities, I strongly suggest you look at it and see how it might fit in for you. A little advice from the people who are already in the internationals, and we've been dragging our attitudes about it for a long, long time. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Reminder, the trivia question is out there. What has been the total 10-year return for the energy sector itself? Knowing that the overall S&P 500 has been 227%. A couple of quick comments now before Adam goes into his Who Am I? And one of them is kind of combining what we're talking about, the housing market with the inflation rate. One of the many, many components of home building that is out of control price-wise is copper. And it begs the question, to me, why do we still make pennies? Can you imagine how little a penny is worth compared to how much it costs and what its impact is on the copper supply? I think it would be a really good time to abandon the penny. And if you want to turn a bunch of them in, maybe give you a 10% bonus on the penny just to get that copper back in circulation. So there, we do have a caller on the line. I don't have Bob.
No, it was just me. I got.
Oh, it was you. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's why it came in the way it did. All right. Although, for those of you listening, 904-222-8255, and you will be put first. I had, let's see, I thought I had one other comment. Oh, yes. The impact of inflation on you, the people. For five consecutive months now, your real wages, your real earnings have fallen. The inflation rate is so out of control that even though people are making a lot more money, they are not making more real money, real meaning after the impact of inflation. Real average weekly earnings fell 0.4 over the month. Now, this is not a good thing, as you can imagine. So back to the old 9.3 million jobs open. Every single state and every single metropolitan area have more jobs available now than they did pre-COVID. That just happened. It was coming back piecemeal. It's now come back through the whole thing. If you are worried about inflation, if you're worried about making enough money, I might be very, very intrigued to start looking around for a job that pays you a lot more. All right, we do have a caller. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
Wonderful. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there, hanging in there.
Good. What's up?
If I may, I'm going to take a stab at the question.
All right.
And then maybe ask a quick question, if I may.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. I'm going to say for the energy sector, for the last 10 years, I'm going to say a small percentage, maybe 1.2%.
Well, that is a small percentage, isn't it? Especially for a 10-year accumulation. Unfortunately,
I agree.
Unfortunately, it's too high.
Really?
I am not making this up.
Interesting. Okay, quick question, if I may. I just saw a statistic that says, very interesting, that seven people are coming to Florida for every one that leaves. And if that's somewhat correct, I'm just curious, in your opinion, when it comes to Jacksonville, can they absorb so many people as far as resources are concerned, meaning living space, roads, utilities, in your opinion, for much longer, or come on down?
Well, Jacksonville's blessed with one thing, space. It is so big that as long as you're willing to live in the western burbs, that there's quite a lot of expansion room available for us. The single thing that bothers me the most, and Adam, you can chime in on this too, but potable water, to me, is going to be the bugaboo of Florida when this growth rate keeps on going. Agree with that, Adam?
Yeah, I do think that that is an important piece of it. The infrastructure and roads are going to be another one. I think Mike, you hit the nail on the head there. It's not that we can't build them. It's just that it takes a long time, and by the time you finish, you should have gone an extra lane.
Yeah.
It's just always how it happens.
It's been going on for 100 years.
Yeah.
The planners could not possibly keep up with the growth we used to have. 7-1 is a pretty big number. Does that include leaving by car or, shall we say, by hearse?
It was a stat that I just saw in general that, according to the latest statistics, for people leaving or coming to a state, when it came to Florida, was 7-1 coming as opposed to leaving.
Well, if you've traveled around Florida enough, you know there's some areas that are going to have a lot of trouble with this, particularly in the southeast where the density is really high.
I just simply noticed that Beach Boulevard and Atlantic Boulevard seems to get more traffic, even during off hours, every day,
A1A,
in my opinion.
Yeah, A1A, same thing. How long have you lived here?
Since the beginning of 2007.
Oh, so you're not even familiar with the old days. You know that Butler Boulevard used to be a toll road?
I heard. I do talk to people, and one of my most common questions is, what was it like 15, 20, 25 years ago? And they tell me there was so much woods and open spaces that now have houses than ever before.
Yeah. When you went to the beach, you either took Beach or Atlantic or Butler. There was nobody there, and you're driving through green trees and all that. And that was just in the 80s. And I think when A1A got busy, we were living over near there at the time. It seemed like right around 1996 or 7, it was like one day they just opened the floodgates and everybody went through. It's been nothing but growth ever since. And we can keep handling it if we handle it right. That's my opinion.
But I agree with you on the potable water supply. But in any case, very interesting. Have a great weekend. Keep up the great work.
We very much appreciate it. You too. Thanks.
It's interesting that he brings that up because this is not a problem that's unique to Florida.
That's right.
In fact, the day before we arrived here in Nosara, there was a protest against a hotel that was, it actually existed before, but it was a very small, not a big deal. Now it's like a beautiful resort. Someone came in and poured a bunch of money into it, and they want to keep expanding, of course.
Yeah.
And the locals and people that have been here forever don't like that.
Adam, we have Mark on the line.
Oh, okay.
Hi, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Thank you.
Oh, good. Yeah, I wanted to see if you had seen in the press what I saw yesterday, a number of articles about a press organization that had obtained IRS files on, I think it was about the 25 richest people in the country.
I did.
Okay. And I wanted to get your reaction on one of the strategies that I had seen that they... the rich people use to avoid taxes with regards to taking their compensation in terms of stock and taking it down to a bank, using it as collateral, and avoiding tax. They take out personal loans against it. And in that process, they're avoiding the taxes.
Well, there is a large difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion. Mm-hmm. Tax avoidance means you're using the tax code to keep what you owe down to a minimum. It's 100% legal to use tax avoidance. It is not 100% legal to use tax evasion. So all I can say to the whiners out there in government who say the rich aren't paying their fair share is change the tax code.
Well, I don't know that you can change the tax code because... In this case, because the situation is that they're not claiming income, you can't have a tax income system if there's no income claim. These people are not showing income because they're taking it out in terms of personal loans, And to me, this is a an outrage and is leading to a lot of inequality. Now, I just want you to know up front, I'm a capitalist. I've had a business for 30 some odd years. I'm retired. I invest in the stock market. But you know, there has to be a fair system. This is not a fair system, the way this is set up, that they're doing this. I understand that it's legal, but this is not ethical, and it's not fair.
Well, you know, I could argue this thing for years, and in fact have, but the bottom line is, if they don't like the system, change the system. And yes, it can be done. They make the rules. They are the Congress. So it's something, it's an argument that can't be won right at the moment. Anyway, I got about 2 seconds left. I've got to run. I appreciate your call and keep listening.
Thank you.
All right. We have to run away for a minute and pay some bills. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And good morning, Greg.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Better than ever. How about you?
Likewise. You know, I just want to make sure that the previous caller, not the previous caller, but the caller before him, he said that there was, for every one person leaving Florida, there's seven moving in, right?
Yes. That was the stat.
Yeah, that's what I was like, oh, my God, I better get on the horn and call Tallahassee. They got to widen that I-4 all over again. Well, I've been here 11 years. They've been working on I-4, and it's still not done. And now we get this great news, which is bad news for people that travel the I-4 corridor.
Yeah, well, how about we just build a super high-speed train instead?
Oh, well, yeah, just like California is,
exactly.
Is thinking of doing. Yeah, that'll work.
I tell you, stupidity abounds.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it very much.
Did you want to take a shot at our trivia question?
You know, I don't know the trivia question, but, you know, I'm going to say it's C.
No, it's a number. What's been the total return?
I mean, when I took my SAT score test, I didn't know the answer. I just selected C. So I'm going to select C. What was the question?
What's the total 10-year return on the energy sector of the S&P 500?
Oh, come on.
And 1.2.
I can't even get on Google. I'm sorry. I can't help you.
Not a problem. Take care of yourself.
All right. Have a good weekend.
You too. Talk soon. And we're going to change the format of things a little bit. Adam's going to put off his Who Am I till next week. I want to talk a little more about these taxes, because there's some fundamental things going on here. And like I said, it's going to be an opinion. It's always going to be controversial, but everybody needs to understand what it is. There has never been a CPA or other tax preparer who got paid 1 cent to calculate your tax bill. Now, that may sound a little bit odd to people until you realize what they actually do. There are three steps in taxes. One is to compute your total income and subsequently taxable income, but that's because of number two, which is to compute your expenses. So you start with your gross income, you take away your expenses, now you have taxable income. Well, any idiot can take that amount of money and look up a tax table at IRS and say, if it's this, you owe this. I don't pay our CPA to make that calculation. That's just the last thing that happens. And I need to break off for a moment because. Good morning, Larry.
Quickie.
Yeah.
-1.2.
That's a low number and a good guess. On the other hand, it's too high.
Oh, just a quick numismatic comment.
Yes.
The pennies are aluminum now.
No kidding.
No kidding. They're plated. They're electroplated copper, but they're aluminum.
No, I did not realize that.
Yeah,
that makes me feel a little better.
Well, it's just, you know, something to think about.
Yeah, a little better. Now we go back to the old part of that. It's so stupid to have a penny. Not worth anything.
Well, that depends. I mean, you know, it depends on what metal it's made out of.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'd rather be able to melt them down. Yep. But I'd rather see those metals go to better uses. But yeah, I've thought that for years and years, and I don't get anywhere. So
my full metal jacket. Huh?
You got it.
That, okay.
Now you're
That'll
talking my metals. Love it. Take care of yourself.
You'll be good.
Too. Anyway, the three steps in taxes, it is a very, very difficult process. Hence, there are people like CPAs and other tax professionals to compute your gross income if you have any complexity in your life. Now, if you just go to work every day and get a W-2, there it is. The 1099 comes early in the year and you're done, except for your probably standard deduction. But if you get into people with more complicated business lives and so on, or corporations, computing the income is not that easy. Then you got part two, which is even harder, which is what are my expenses? And calculating expenses is what most of the tax code does. It tells you what can be expensed in any given situation on any given year. So calculating that is very critical, and it requires, like I say, if it's a complex return, it requires someone who is very well qualified to do so, and that's what we pay for. So how do you compute the taxes? Well, taxable income times tax rate equals your taxes. So when people like Biden talk about a 15% minimum tax and complain that, oh, Amazon doesn't pay any taxes, well, why? They apply the normal income rules to their tax return, and then they apply the tax code to compute what's deductible in this given year. And if that sum comes out to zero and you apply a 15% rate to it, I have a college degree in mathematics, and I know the answer to that in my head. It's zero. So if Biden wants a 15% minimum tax rate, what is he going to tax? Is he going to tax your profit? What if you don't have any? 15% of what? And the question is very deep. 15% of what is going to be taxed? Maybe we have a clue sitting out there by what's called the digital tax. And I know some of you have heard me talk about the digital tax. The digital tax is a tax that would tax the gross income of certain companies engaged in a business of some sort that is heavy in the digital, and they get to tell you what company that is. So they would then levy a tax against the gross income, even if the company is losing money and should technically get a tax loss carry forward, they still would owe the digital tax. They just wouldn't owe income tax. So until somebody tells me what you're going to tax, I'm going to tell you that it can't be done. Now, let's say you like the current system. Well, nobody does, but I think it works because it's been working a long time. But other people who hate the tax system can hate it because it's too complicated. That's a good one. I like that. The simplification we did for individuals was a good thing, and getting rid of the corporate alternative minimum tax was a good thing. But if you're the type who resents rich people because of what little tax they pay, then we really have to have a serious discussion about what a business expense is or what a personal deductible expense is, or your argument turns out to be simply emotional and philosophical but not practical. Got something to add on that one, Adam?
Yeah, I tend to agree. What I really don't like is politicians complaining about the tax code when they're in charge of the tax code. Exactly. And I understand there's not a system that's going to make everybody happy, but there are a lot of better systems than what we have now. But the problem is no politician will actually propose something like that. If you look at the fair tax or something like a sales tax type replacement tax, that's actually a much fairer way to do things, but they won't ever consider it, so it just gets thrown off. It's kind of like people complaining about how power is generated, but they won't look at nuclear power, the safest, right, cleanest way to create energy, but they won't look at it because it has a bad political rap. So I feel like sometimes the tax code argument is one that, as you mentioned earlier, you can't win that argument because there's never a system that's going to make everybody happy.
You know, the term fair, it's the new F word for politics these days. Fair is a perception. Fair and equal, that gets a little closer to definable. But how can you say something's unfair and not change it if you're really adamant that it's unfair? And our government, for most of its life, has used that term. It's not fair. And I just don't see how this discussion can go anywhere without tearing the discussion down to the barest part of it and saying this tax code at whatever date is going to be chucked, the whole thing 100%, and replaced with, my version of that would be, of course, the fair tax, but replaced with something new to get rid of the years and years of accumulated stuff and go on to a change. This is an argument that'll go on and on for a long time, and we appreciate people calling. Minus 25% over 10 years, total return for the energy sector. So if you think it might be getting a little overpriced right now, you might want to look back and say, maybe not nearly as much as I thought. All right, we'll be back next week. Thanks, Adam, for getting through to us. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is the Bandway Financial Hour.